The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Claff for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Claff. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
And good evening. I'm Stan Claff. And tonight I have with me a guest, Stephan Brosen, who has written a book. And just to give you a little bit of a background to it, so all of us in our lifetimes will experience some sort of tragedy or some sort of, and we all experience death in one form or another. People pass away in the family, people who are close to us, and how we deal with it is what makes us. And some of us deal with it in a very personal way. Stephan lost his wife just before his 50th birthday, having lost his father to a brain tumor when he was very young and 6 or 7 years old. And he decided that he wouldn't take the path of making this only a personal experience. He wanted to put it out and try and guide people of what he experienced and what he would and how they could possibly learn from his experience. So, Stephan, welcome. Thank you for joining us. I don't know if this is a painful experience for you to relive the whole thing on air, but I just want to ask you a question. You went in to write a book. Clearly, it wasn't for commercial motives. This is a cathartic experience, I would imagine, to try and put down on paper what you had experienced. I note that your family were involved. I don't know if they were involved in the writing or they just contributed. So what motivated you to take it to the point of putting your thoughts on paper and your feelings on paper? Was it helpful? Was it cathartic or was it painful?
I think it was.
Or is that too many questions?
I think it's a good question. I think, you know, I had experienced two tumors in my life. One at a very young age. So as you said, my father passing away at the age of 7 from a brain tumor. And that had a profound effect on me through my life. It caused me to be very anxious. It caused me to be very fearful. A father, that's the sort of support, security, stability that a young boy needs, I'd lost that. And I never realized the effect that tragedy or difficulty or adversity actually has on a young child. And I think through the years, I just thought that was normal. I didn't realize that this little me sort of had all these thoughts in my head and was very anxious and trying to control things and fearful that a tumor could come at any stage. And later on, I started to realize that you don't need to be like this. You actually can be present, you can embrace tragedy, you can embrace adversity. And the result was that with my kids losing their mom, I didn't want them to share the same pain and anxiety and fear that I had for so many years. So I wanted to teach them the skills and the way to deal with adversity, because I saw two very different examples of how to deal with adversity. One, the little me that was very fearful and frightened, and that stuck with me till, you know, in my 40s. And then the bigger me that handled the, you know, my wife passing away from a tumor, but it was a much more leaning in sort of approach, a much small sort of accepting approach, and with that type of skill or that type of approach, I felt it was very important for my kids to have that, because I know it makes an enormous difference in dealing with adversity. So I think that was the reason to put it into a book format, so that my kids could have something tangible. One for that was an honor to my wife Jody, and also that they were going to, everybody's experiencing adversity and everybody's going to have difficulties in life, and I wanted them to have something tangible that when there was adversity again, they could again refer to this book and see how we dealt with the tragedy and adversity of losing their mom.
What is the age group of your kids?
So I've got four kids. I've got, when Jody got sick, I had, my eldest daughter was 20. She was at UCT. And then my son, is 18. He was writing a check. And then I've got another daughter who's 16 and a daughter 14. So they were, so it was the four of us. It was a real sort of shock because, as I say, my son was writing matric. Jodie was a very key influence in all our lives. She was a very active mother. She handled a lot of the admin, a lot of the support of the kids. And now to have a daughter in Cape, a son in matric, and then all of a sudden, to realize that tumor and that a very aggressive tumor and a tumor that sort of had a fair idea that our time was very limited with her. It was a real sort of shock, and was I realized this fear and this anxiety and this tumor that I've been working from as a little kid, trying to resolve and always deal with that everything possibly could be a tumor. You know, this little me that used to come out, sort of, I didn't want that to happen to my kids. Yeah, so that was, you know, part of the whole reason I wrote the book.
And when you embarked on this, I mean, when you in the Jewish religion and us Jews, we have a kind of a program in how to deal with this. So it's kind of set down for you, you know, you say Shiva, you go through the process of, you know, of all the things that are laid down for us in our Jewish values and our Jewish way of doing things. So this clearly wasn't the way that you obviously went through it, but this wasn't the way that you in the end dealt with it. You dealt with it on quite a different level.
Yeah, I dealt it on a very different level. I think that those rituals are very important and they're very good and they're very helpful. But I think at a psychological level, that's what I wanted to get across to my kids. How do you deal with this on a psychological level? You know, when somebody or your mother is got a brain tumor and you know she's only got 6 weeks left to live, how are you going to deal with that? So are you going to be fearful of every moment? Are you going to be angry? Those are the skills that I wanted my kids to have. I wanted them to say, listen, time is limited. Let's embrace it. Let's not waste the time we have by being in our head all the time. Let's actually grab the moment. Let's grab the beauty of what we have in front of us. This is a unique, special time that God's given us, and its own way, its own beauty. And I think if you lean into adversity and you allow your bigger me, which is more accepting and non-judgmental and more embracing, you get a lot more out of the experience. And there's a lot more healing in the process. And that's what I wanted to get across, because I saw as a little kid, that didn't happen. My mom, when my dad passed away at the age of 7, there was prayers and, you know, we sat shiva. Psychologically, no one really spoke to me about all these thoughts in my head. You know, when you're a little kid, you have thoughts that maybe you're guilty, you're responsible for your father's death, or maybe there's something you said that upset him, that caused him to have this. Psychologically, there's a lot of stuff that goes on, and I don't think there's enough input on how to deal with those psychological effects that go on in any form of adversity. And this is what I wanted to put across, is to realize that they're not thoughts in their head, that there's much more to then goes on in your head, and that you can actually embrace, deal with situations. So I do. The sugar process is a fantastic process, and it works wonderfully, but there's a lot more to the whole psychological element of dealing with adversity as well.
Now, when you're going through this experience, so there's obviously three, or maybe there are more stages, but I would imagine you know that this is going to happen, because obviously you've been told and the doctors are telling you the prognosis is not good. And so there's the before, and then there's the actual event, and then there's afterwards. So at which stage did you kind of decide, I'm going to write a book about this, or did this happen post everything, once you finished with Shiva, et cetera, et cetera? At which stage was this book always in your head somehow?
I think this book only happened afterwards. You know, I think what happened was the way we dealt with the whole situation and losing Jody. My kids said to me afterwards, "Dad, it's not often for somebody to have two tumors in their life, or to lose two people to brain tumors." And I had worked so hard in dealing with the original brain tumor loss with my dad, and it put, you know, I've been in therapy for 10 years. I had written a previous book on how not to be in your head when adversity takes place. And then having gone through this with Jody, and I think also with Jody being so accepting and so embracing of the process, and the fact that my kids could tap into that presence, that acceptance that Jody had, and we had dealt with it so well, people started saying to me, "Listen, you know, this is such a unique experience. You guys have handled it so well. Your kids are doing well. They've gone back to university. My son did very well at matric. You know, he managed to get into UCG." So people and my kids said, "Dad, let's put this down in a book." And I thought, all right, this could be quite a cathartic exercise, because it's a nice way of remembering Jody. At the same time, it will give my kids some reinforcement of the skills and the tools we used to deal with adversity. So I think the idea really came out afterwards because of the success, but of the reasonably positive way we dealt with loss.
Now, did you do this totally on your own, or as a family, or did you get outside help, psychiatric, psychological, or is this something that came from within, or were you guided in some way in dealing with this and your thoughts? I mean, you're not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, so did you need outside help for this?
No, you know, the amazing thing, I've always had an affinity to psychology and the understanding of the mind and spirituality and all of that. In fact, my youngest daughter actually said to me like a few days ago, she said, "Dad, geez, I was looking at your bookshelf and every book is about mindfulness and about being present and dealing with fear." I think because having lost my dad at such a young age and being so fearful and so in my head, that had caused me the last 30, 40 years to read books on how to, embrace love. I'd studied with a Rabbi Howard Jackson for 20 years. We had studied faith and trust for 20 years. So I had a lot of knowledge with regards to life and dealing with the day-to-day's, events. So I think I had the input, but I didn't have the skills I'm not a writer. So I worked with a guy by the name of Trevor Waller, who's you could say like a ghost writer. And him and I met on, numerous occasions, and I put across the whole idea that I wanted to, put into a book. And he met with my kids, interviewed my kids, they put across their views on how they dealt with adversity, how they embraced the moment, and then that's sort of how the whole process sort of came into play.
So this is the Hebrew Order of David, the HOD Hour. We are on Thursday evenings from 6 to 7. We talk about issues. This is as a fraternity, so we talk about issues for men, but not only for men, but for everybody who, because everybody has a story. So wherever you go, everybody in our experience has a story, and the Hebrew Order of David is essentially about people. And tonight we have with us, we're privileged to have Stefan Brosen, who has written a book. His book is called You Are Here, A Story of Presence. It deals with how he dealt with and how his family dealt with the passing of his wife and in earlier stage of his life, the passing of his father, both due to brain tumors, and just exploring different ways of why this was important to him and what he hoped to achieve. Obviously, it wasn't a commercial enterprise. This was something which came from the heart, and which involved the rest of the family in trying to put down on paper something which he could leave for both his family, as he says. But also I think this has a broader audience that could benefit from reading this book. It is available if you want to go to Amazon. I have checked that out. It's not an expensive book, so once again, clearly not a commercial venture. But I guess you had to cover costs. But so take us through just a little bit, if it's not too painful, of where this began. So suddenly Jody got sick, you realized there was a problem, and now you had to start dealing with it, tell the kids and explain everything to them. I suppose that in itself is difficult enough.
Yeah, I think, you know, it almost starts, I mean, like, the story really probably starts at the age of, you know, sort of, as I say, as a young kid, because of, you know, being 4 years, at the age of four, my dad picked up a tumor and he went in for an operation and they cut out quite a large part of his frontal lobe, and he came back home and he was partially paralyzed. Now, as a little boy, suddenly seeing your father, as I mentioned earlier, who's your safety, your security, all of a sudden he looks
your hero.
Your hero, yeah, your support, your faith and trust in the universe, the person who used to pick you up, play with you, all of a sudden was not unable to do this, and he had changed. And no one really, in those days, psychology wasn't a big thing, so we didn't, no one explained to us why this had happened. It was just he had had a tumor and you had to get on with it. And I just watched him deteriorate, and then 3 years later he passed away, and we had prayers, and then life just sort of carried on. But the tragedy and the adversity still stuck with me, and this little me still had these fears and these thoughts that were with me all the time. And I think this happens to all of us, because all of us have a little me that sort of, from adversity as a child, we carry. But I was carrying these anxieties, these fears, always worried for a potential tumor that could possibly happen, whether it's someone said something strange or funny or did this, that could be a tumor. These thoughts in my head, and I realized that I wasn't really entirely happy. I was always in my head. Then I met my wife at the age of 16, and we dated for about 10 years, and she was, you know, my childhood sweetheart, and we had a fantastic relationship, and we had four kids together, but I was always still in my head and looking to try get back this faith and trust that I had lost as a little kid, because your father had been taken away, and as a result that faith and trust was gone. And that's why I went to Ursemeyer and I studied three times a week, faith and trust, and I was trying to rebuild this faith in the universe, to faith in the world. And I remember walking one day in Exclusive Books, because I always used to go to the psychology, the philosophy section, or the psychology section, and there was this book suddenly called The Power of Now. The Power of Now. And I suddenly said, wow, now? I'm always worrying about I've always been worried about the past. What about now? Now? The power of now. There's something special about this now. So I started reading the book and I brought it back to house, and I underlined books. That's what I do every night. And I started to realize actually was underlining the whole book, that I had never really been in the moment. Suddenly this book, Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle, started that there was a value of being in the now, and that you had to store all chatter that goes in, all these thoughts. They explain thoughts like on a highway, lots of cars going on a highway, shooting by, and that's thoughts in your head, shooting by a highway, and then occasionally a red taxi goes by, and you cling on to that taxi, and then you go for a whole ride, you're in your thoughts, and you jump into that taxi, and then all of a sudden you let that go. And those are your thoughts. You don't need to take all these thoughts seriously. And I started realizing that I've been in my head in these thoughts for the last 30 odd years. And that if I actually still my mind and I'm present, there's a lot of beauty and joy in this moment. So I then went and I thought, listen, my kids are growing up. I don't want them to sort of have thoughts all the time. And I put a book together for my kids called Tree. It was short for Trust God, Rejoice in His Presence, because that's ultimately what your job is to rejoice in His presence. He's giving you this moment. It's a beautiful moment. Wherever you are, if you're sitting on your chair or you're driving a car or you're in the studio, beautiful, beautiful moments. And no ego, because there's a line going through the ears, because we all got this little me, our stuff from childhood that takes us out of the moment, that makes us fearful, that stops us from grabbing the moment. Together for my kids, and because it's so hard to try to teach this, and I thought, well, at least I'm going to put it in a book format, so when they're a bit older, they can actually look at it and understand my philosophy on life. And then one day, I remember my youngest daughter had heart conditions as a child. Suddenly, Jodie called that she had stopped breathing, and she was 3 years old, and I needed to run to she was at the Morningside Clinic, and I needed to get there urgently. And I was at my mom having breakfast, and I was enjoying the breakfast, and all of a sudden I got this call from Jodie, and then this little me just took over, and I got into these thoughts of what's going to happen when I get to the hospital. Is she going to be alive? What will happen to Jodie if she's alive? What will happen to my marriage? Will I survive? All these thoughts, this little me that I had experienced as a child with loss of my father, suddenly came up again, got to the Morningside Hospital, and thank God she was crying, and I ran down to emergency and I heard her crying. And it was just suddenly the most beautiful thing just to hear her cry, because suddenly just the sound of hearing her. And I remember coming back home to my kitchen, and I had breakfast because I had been interrupted by this whole story, and I poured myself a bowl of muesli, and all of a sudden I could smell muesli, put it into this bowl, and I could feel the bowl, what it felt like. It was cool. And as I poured the milk into the bowl, I suddenly saw the milk bowl, and I could see all the nuts and the rain and the seeds, and I held the spoon, and it felt cool, and I put it into the bowl, and I picked it up, and I tasted it, and I suddenly realized
this is what it's like in the now. This moment is fantastic. Slowly, a bowl of cereal, and it was delicious. And I started realizing more and more that this moment, wherever we are, we need to embrace. Started living more of a life of being a lot more present. You know, I used to come home from work. In the old days, I would arrive home from work and my kids would jump up in front of me. I wouldn't even hear what they were talking, but I would be so busy in my head, I couldn't even, you know, hear what they were saying. I was thinking about what happened at the office. And now I started to take a breath and actually see them in front and suddenly see the space between me and them and using my senses, hearing them and appreciating touch. And I started realizing the beauty of this moment. And then 3 years ago, what happened was all of a sudden, Jodie started becoming a little bit forgetful. She was getting to fetch the kids from lessons. She did a lot of the accounting and admin, and all of a sudden the accounts were paid. And I started being a little bit worried. I'd been to, you know, married for 25 years, and I'd been with her for 10 years before. And I started thinking, this is very strange. Is this inner pause? Is this, you know, maybe a form of depression? I don't know. My kids were getting older now. They were starting to move out of the house. And I remember going to therapy and talking to my therapist and just crying and saying, I don't know my wife. There's something strange about Jodie. I don't know what it is. So I remember one night waking up at about 5 a.m. and suddenly seeing that Jodie wasn't to be. So I got a fright and I climbed up and I walked down the passage and I saw her on a computer and I said to her, babe, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. What are you doing? And she said, it was 5 a.m. and I just knew something was wrong. So we told our doctor and she ran a whole range of tests, and it was just pre-Rosh Hashanah 3 years ago, and all the tests were coming through okay and everything was good, and we were waiting for one last test to break. And I remember it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Rosh Hashanah was starting that morning, and the neurologist came into the room. And I was quite anxious to get Jodie home and the kids because I wanted to be home for Rosh Hashanah. And the neurologist said, listen, can I come for a walk with her? She wants to show me something that they've picked up on the computer. And I remember, you know, when everything just suddenly goes dark, cold, and I walked down this passage and I just started feeling sick. And she put this disc on the computer and on there popped this enormous, what if she showed me this brain scan, and there was an enormous tennis ball sitting in the front of her lobe. And I just felt all of a sudden this tumor fighting for that I'd been preparing for subconsciously suddenly was back. All of a sudden, this fearful that I'd spent work and so many hours on, in my last, you know, 40 odd years dealing with it, trying to manage it, suddenly was back. And, you know, we all just felt sick, and we were, my sister, that evening for Rosh Hashanah, it was just sick and depressing. And I remember trying to go to sleep, and I just could not sleep. I was shaking. I was fearful. This was the mother of my children, someone 35 years to hands and I loved, and she had tumor. This tumor was that I had experienced. And we managed to get into Moore Park Hospital because to her, that Dr. Zaria, he was the guy who had brain tumors. And we went there, and that whole week I was absolutely, that little me had come back. I remember people coming to me for, you know, coming to the house, and I just couldn't even deal with it. The fact that people at the house, I remember, you know, going to the gym at about 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and it was closed. And then I went to Old Ed's outdoor pool because I liked to swim. And I remember just being so angry, swimming, shouting at God and saying, how can this tumor be back? How can, you know, this happen to me again? I'm not going to cope. So we got, we're in Mill Park, and that was the day of the operation, and I thought to myself, you know what, I cannot let my kids experience the little me and this little me affect them. We've got to deal with the situation differently, not how I dealt with it as a little child. So it was an 8-hour op, and I took my kids for a walk. There was a little park just next to Mill Park. And all five of us got together. I put my arms around all of them, and I said to them, listen, guys, we didn't choose the situation as but it can either make us bitter or it can make us better, and it's going to make us better. We are going to lean into it, going to embrace it, we're going to deal with it in the best way we know how. And the op was finished, and I remember going to Maria afterwards, and he came out and he said to us, he's got rid of out of the whole tumor, but he's concerned that it's, he thinks it's a GBM tumor, glioblastoma multiflora tumor, and stage 4, and that's an extremely aggressive tumor, and you will know within the next 3 months whether treatment has worked or not, but just stringent course of chemo and radiation. And the amazing thing was, we all came home, and then Jody was very, you know, relaxed about the whole thing. She had been very sort of, you know, anxious prior to this. She was quite an anxious person. And now all of a sudden, she's very accepting about the fact that she had this tumor. And this played into my whole belief of embracing adversity, dealing with adversity. And we started to, like, lean into it. We would sit at the table and enjoy the meals, whereas before everyone had been running off to go watch series or to on their phone. Now we could sit at the table for an hour, hour and a half, and, you know, talk to each other, and just a joy to watch her eat. And going and taking her to chemo actually became like a special sort of experience. We grabbed it, you know, we used to hold her hand and walk with her, and she had such humility with, you know, the people that used to clean the floors and the nurses, and she was always just sort of very present, very grounded, and just was grabbing, and we were doing something with her. And then, unfortunately, 3 months later, it was December, we were meant to all go to Zanzibar for holiday. And I knew at the back of my head that this could possibly be one of the last holidays we could. And I'd got the all clear from all the doctors except one, from Dr. Rappaport. And I remember it was the day before, and he said to me that, listen, he doesn't want Jody to go. So, you know, I just again felt sick, you know, wanted to go on this holiday, and we couldn't go on this holiday. And we all came back and we all chatted about it, and was about that I would go with the kids because my son had just finished matric, and my daughter was advanced, and we needed this holiday. It had been so stressful these last 3 months that we needed to go. And we went off to Zanzibar, but it was decided Jody's mom would look after Jody. And we went to Zanzibar, and we had an amazing time. Every time Shirley used to call to see how Jody was, we were, you know, nervous and anxious. But after we'd spoken to her, She, you know, we embraced it. We enjoyed what we were eating. We enjoyed the beaches. We enjoyed the time we had together, because we realized that life is short and that you need to actually embrace what you have. And then we came back from Zanzibar, and my kids went off to Cape Town, and I stayed with Jody because Jody wasn't well enough to go to Cape Town. And I can tell you that Jody and I was beautiful 2 weeks together. We would, you know, it's almost like the time we have now in a strange way. We would go to Checkers and go buy, you know, the bread that we wanted to have for dinner, and then we're going to do, see a tuna or salmon, and we would go into the kitchen and we would cook it, and we would sit together and we would be together. Things slowed down. We started appreciating what we have. It was an amazing experience just to each other. And unfortunately, that December, Joe's just started to deteriorate more, and they decided to do another scan on her. And I remember it was at the Linksfield Clinic, and they came back and said, listen, the only person who can really interpret the scan is Dr. Zaria. And my kids came back from Cape Town, and we all went to Dr. Zaria's office. I remember waiting there and then going to see him. And he looked at the scan and he said to us, listen, guys, sorry, you can stop radiation, stop chemo, the tumor's back. There's nothing you can do. She's got sort of 6 weeks left to live. And I remember we all just cried. But we embraced the tears. We embraced the emotion. We felt it. I remember every day driving after that, almost for a year, wherever I'd go, because I'd been with Jody for 35 years, every place was a memory. I would just suddenly stop and cry, but welcome it. I would embrace it. And it was like that with my kids. And as those 6 weeks started coming towards the end, I called in a hospice counselor, a guy by the name of Cameron Herman, to come and talk to me, because I thought it was important for them to understand the whole process of sort of death and dealing with issues. And he said an amazing thing. He said, you know, your mother never gives a child anything that's not good for them. And your heart's going to break, but you're going to be able to put it together again, and it's going to come back twice the size. And she's giving you a consciousness, an appreciation for life, for the moment, for grabbing what's in front of you. Other kids are going to be worrying about the cell phones, you know, what they look like or what should they get to wear. You are going to appreciate life for what the simple things, the small things. And that's what we you know, to do. And my youngest kids, when Jody went to have a shower, they would get into the shower with her, and they would laugh, and they would hold her hands, and they would giggle, and they would have fun. And then Jody, when she would brush her teeth, they grabbed her from behind and held her and hugged her. And Jody, who was prior to this, who was a bit upset and a bit depressed that all the kids were leaving home, all of a sudden was having this love and this joy from the kids. But when she got into bed, she would sit on her bed and she almost said, listen, guys, it's enough. I just want to go to sleep. She was getting this love that she sort of craved so much because we were embracing what we had. And unfortunately, just over 2 years, 2 days before my 50th birthday, Jody passed. And we, you know, it was obviously very traumatic and very, very, you know, difficult. But we were grateful for the time that we had. We had leant into the time that we had. We had embraced the moment. We had embraced the time with it. And so when she passed, my kids were okay. We used to cry a lot, and we welcomed those cries.
We felt whatever we had, and so process sort of was healing, and eventually then we got to the point of saying, listen, let's actually put this into a book, and actually it's a great way to remember mom and just to remember being here, because ultimately what it's all about is being here. You know, we're here for a limited period of time, all of us. So we need to embrace these moments we have. And even like now, you see it with this COVID. And, you know, we realize that people are mortals. We're not here forever. We need to embrace what we have. We need to not let that little me overtake us and make us fearful and worry and always be, you know, concerned about the future or the past. Let's grab what we have. And the amazing thing is that with that approach that we've done of embracing it, my kids have really, you know, thrived. My eldest daughter is, you know, finishing business science. My son is in third year business science. My other daughter's doing psychology. And then, you know, my other daughter's in grade 11. And they're all doing well socially, school, and internally as well. So that's really our sort of story of how we really dealt with adversity. And that's the idea, is that you can, if you lean into adversity and you get out of this little, your thoughts and you get out of the little me, but into this bigger me, life is a lot more meaningful, a lot more peaceful, and a lot more. And that's really our story. Mm.
So, I mean, it takes a lot to be able to articulate your thoughts and to articulate your emotions to the extent that you could talk. I mean, you've talked now for the last 20 minutes uninterrupted. I didn't want to interrupt you because I was enthralled. And you put it across in a way which is very meaningful. I'm sure that people out there who are listening tonight, those that are not listening are missing something, because you told a story which I'm sure a lot of people have experienced, but have never been able to articulate or put it down, or really to say what they really feel. How you've taken it on with your children is actually really kol hakavod, shaker to you, that you managed to get through this. And I think it is a lesson. I think people should get hold of this book. It's called You Are Here, A Story of Presence, written by Stefan Brosen. So in the last few minutes, Stefan, just give us a little bit of background to what you do, what sort of work you do. You don't just write books. So.
Yeah, sure. Well, I look, I'm a chartered accountant by profession, believe it or not, but I actually don't practice as well. I'm involved in property. I'm involved in affordable housing. We're involved in renovating properties in the Joburg CBD. And also now, you know, in sort of outlying areas like Middelburg and mining towns, build homes, the lower end of the market, the 600,000-700,000 rand homes, and also apartments, and rent them out. But I think my real passion and has been to help people sort of be more present and more mindful, and to actually ran a few courses. Four people have a Power Up Now group that tries to give people the skills and the tools to be more present and to be more grounded. Because I think that's what's missing so much. You know, we all know it's great to be in the moment, what we have. But, you know, we need the skills. Like, for example, we have our senses, you know, our five senses, and they're such wonderful gifts. And those are wonderful tools that we can use to be present. So I like to help certain individuals. I know, like, you know, to sometimes at Investec Bank and courses for people there on how to be more mindful, how to be more present, and to grab the moment more, and to not let that little me overtake you, but to let that little bigger me come out, and to grab what grab and embrace what life's giving you. So I think that's my real passion. If you ask,
it comes shining through. So this is the Hebrew of David. This is the HND hour. For the last hour, we've been enthralled listening to Stefan Brosen, who sadly lost his father when he was around 7 years old, lost his wife just before his 50th birthday to brain tumors, has learned to deal with it together with his family, written a book called You Are Here, A Story of Presence, and he can hear that he lives in the now. He's able to articulate what his emotions are, and that is a brave man, and a man who's able to really say what he feels, and I think people will appreciate what you've had to say. I want to really thank you for coming on the show tonight. Just before we end off, I'd like to just talk about one of the projects that the Hebrew Order of David is involved in, and that is to do with COVID-19. We've always been collecting food parcels and distributing it to the Jewish community. We've now expanded that distribution to other organizations and other areas, where this week we're going to be delivering clothes which you've collected and parcels. And next week we're launching fully into our collection. We'd ask people to donate to assist us in this mission. There are a lot of people out there who need it. So, Stefan, taking from you, we need to live in the now, need to give of ourselves, and to assist us in doing what we do, which is assisting the community. And once again, a really big thank you. It was a privilege having you on the show, and really wish you and your family all the best going forward. Clearly you're grounded, and I take my hat off to all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Stan. Great to be here. Thank you.
And good night to everybody, and good Shabbos. And hopefully going forward, we'll all find space to live in the now. And maybe the now will be better than it is now. So thank you and good night.